So hopefully in a moment, if we can get the slides up, we can see the first slide. I'm going to ask you if you can work out, because normally our post boxes are red, but occasionally as you go around different towns and villages, you might come across a gold post box. So does anybody know why post boxes were painted, some of them were painted gold? Yeah, 2012 Olympics. So when somebody got a gold medal, or Paralympics, or the Olympic Games, when somebody got a gold medal, the place where they came from, they painted the post boxes gold. I don't know if we've got any in Harrogate. I've never seen one. Anyway, I'm sure there were some famous people from Harrogate. But there's kind of that sense, isn't there, that places are proud when one of their own kind of becomes famous or achieves something great. It's kind of that celebrating that hometown hero. Well, towns are celebrate the famous unless you happen to be Nazareth. Leading up to this, the start of this chapter, Jesus has been on something of a roll. He's calmed the storm, which we saw last week. He's restored a demon-possessed man. He heals the woman who touched the hem of the cloak. And then he raises his Jairus' daughter from the dead. So he's done all these amazing things. And then he goes to his hometown. And the local hero hits a very definite brick wall. Well, things start very well. We're told that together over the news of the miracles and healings, that when the people heard Jesus, were told that they were amazed. But if you continue to read, you'll see that that amazement soon vanishes. And they turn to asking questions about the source of Jesus' supernatural wisdom and power. In fact, the only explanation to the questions they ask about Jesus' wisdom and power is that it comes from God. But rather than allowing Jesus' words and miracle to reveal that to them, they begin to bolster their own thoughts and arguments about who Jesus is by pointing out that they know his family, by saying, actually, this is just Mary's son. Isn't this the carpenter? Jesus' response shows to me that he understands something of what they are saying, because he responds by saying a prophet is not without honor except in his own town, among his relatives, and in his own home. Jesus can see that they are overfamiliar with who Jesus is. And we're told that they take offense to Jesus. They're unwilling to embrace him for who he truly is. There's almost this sense that they can't get past his humanity and the Jesus that they knew. Of course, it must have been quite difficult. If you'd grown up with this person for 30 years and you played with him in the street, or he was your neighbor, or in fact was your local carpenter, it would have been difficult maybe to make that transition to the person they now heard about and saw in front of them. But there's a sense that they weren't even willing to open up their hearts and see the evidence before them. They had the opportunity, and yet they didn't take it. They couldn't get past Jesus' humanity. Well, in the original, the word for offence is quite a strong word, and it can be translated literally as a stumbling block or somebody that causes you to trip over. The stumbling block for these people was that they were too familiar with Jesus. They tripped over the fact that he was one of them. Despite all of the evidence that they were hearing and that they had heard about who Jesus was, they still held on ultimately to their unbelief. The fact that this is in Jesus' hometown is shocking enough. But for me, I think the real shock is contained in verses 5 and 6. Because first of all, Mark tells us that Jesus could not do any miracles in this place aside from healing a few people. Jesus couldn't do any miracles, is what it says. This is the powerful, almighty Son of God who's been this unstoppable force all through the region of Galilee, and now it comes to a stop in his hometown. His power, I think, is obstructed by their stubborn, determined refusal to believe. Of course, Jesus' power is not dependent on people's faith in order for him to be able to perform miracles. If we think about the crippled man at the pool of Bethsaida, he didn't even know who Jesus was when Jesus healed him. Go back to a few chapters before in Mark, we have these two demon-possessed men who were delivered, and actually it's not until afterwards that they declare their faith. And Jesus could hardly ask for faith beforehand when he raised people from the dead. But actually, it is in response to the people's unbelief that Jesus chooses not to do any miracles in this place, apart from healing a few people who, I'm a guess, did have faith. As I said earlier, along to the children and young people, the purpose of Jesus' miracles is always to confirm and affirm who he is, the Son of God, and to reveal himself as Lord and Messiah, in order that it might lead to faith. The people of Nazareth had already made up their mind who Jesus was. So I'm guessing that Jesus decided there was no point in doing the miracles there. I found a really good, for me, translation of verse 5 when it says, "And because of their unbelief, he was unwilling to do any miracles among them, except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them." The people of Nazareth missed out big time. Not only in witnessing miracles and the mighty work of Jesus, but ultimately they missed out understanding and grasping who Jesus truly was as the Son of God. So first of all, we're told Jesus could do no miracles in that place. But secondly, we're told that Jesus was amazed by their lack of faith. I can't think of anything worse that Jesus might have said or thought or be written about. About this place, we read often that the crowds were amazed about Jesus and who he was and what he did. But actually, I can only find two places in the Bible where we read that Jesus was amazed. This is one of them, that Jesus was amazed by their unbelief. The other one is when the faith of the Roman centurion, when he comes to Jesus and asks for a healing of his servant, and he says to Jesus, "You don't even need to come. I trust your authority to be able to heal without coming to see my servant." And we're told that Jesus was amazed or marveled at this person, saying, "Not even in Israel have I found such faith." A direct comparison here, Jesus is amazed by their lack of faith with the Roman centurion, this Gentile, who perhaps we wouldn't have thought would have grasped who Jesus was. We're told that Jesus was marveled and amazed at the faith that he had. And as Anne read after this passage from verse 7 onwards, as Jesus sends out those 12 disciples on a mission to bring the gospel to the region, he tells them that not everybody will accept him. In other words, that they will face rejection for the gospel, and they're told to dust their feet off and move on. But I'm wondering whether Jesus took the disciples to Nazareth for them to see something of the impact on the gospel of unbelief. It was a teaching moment for Jesus' disciples as they witnessed people who hardened their heart to the gospel. But as we think about this encounter, this episode in Nazareth, first of all, I wonder whether we have ever really looked at the evidence of who Jesus really is. You know, it's really easy, isn't it, to assume that we know who he is. But I wonder whether we've ever been able to look past sometimes our preconceived ideas or our culture's view of who they think Jesus is and explore Jesus for ourselves by reading the Gospels. I wonder whether we can hear and accept the same invitation that Jesus wanted to offer to those people in Nazareth to turn from our sin, from our own way of doing life, and to become a part of God's kingdom, allowing Jesus to shape every area of our lives and directing our lives so that we can become the best selves as God has designed us to be. Jesus never forces himself on people, as we see in this episode, but he does look for faith and belief as a foundation to work from. The reality is that these Nazareth folk had more than enough evidence before them to point to who Jesus was, and yet they continually and stubbornly refused to believe. Those irrelevant issues that they raised became stumbling blocks to defend their unbelief. It diverted their attention away from the truth of Jesus. And the reality is that today, even small issues, and I'm sure many of us will have seen this with people that we talk to about Jesus, even the small issues can be used as a great excuse for not believing in Jesus, to justify rejecting Jesus and the gospel. Because it's really easy, isn't it, sometimes to focus on those irrelevant and non-important issues as we write Jesus off. But the great news is that we have the same evidence before us today that those people of Nazareth had. We have Jesus' teachings. We have evidence, and we can read about the miracles that he did and the healings, and all bearing witness to who Jesus is. But the one thing that we have that those people of Nazareth did not is that we have the wonderful miracle of the cross and the resurrection and all that means for each one of us. The reality is that we will still encounter people today who take offense to Jesus, to those who might acknowledge him as a great teacher, but nothing more. Even when presented with the evidence, those who turn away. And of course, that is people's choice to be able to do that. But if we've never looked at who Jesus is by reading the Gospels for ourselves, whether you're here today or listening online, can I encourage us to do that, to give Jesus the opportunity to show himself to us through the Gospels and to think how we might respond. But secondly, as we look at this passage, for those who are followers of Jesus, I wonder whether we want these mighty deeds that Jesus talks about to be happening in our lives and in our church. Because if we do, I would say that we need to continually cultivate a context and a culture of being expectant that God will be able to do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine. To have a culture of expectation of who Jesus is, of what he can do, but also to live that out, that truth out in our lives. The reality is that unbelief can still kill Jesus' work in today. It can rob us as a church of our power. But we often talk about belief and faith, but I wonder whether we ever think about those pockets of unbelief maybe in our lives or in our church. Because the reality is that actually even as believers, I think we're a mixture of the two things. We can have great belief about certain aspects of Jesus in our lives and in the church and what he can do. But I wonder whether sometimes we do have unbelief when we're not trusting and thinking that God is able to do immeasurably more than we can ask or imagine. The reality is that Jesus wants to reshape our lives as a church and also as individuals. But we do have to believe that he is able to do that. We have to step out in faith, trusting that he is able. So we have a part to play in either helping or hindering the work of Christ. I wonder whether we have become too familiar with Jesus. Our faith has become too complacent or we're too indifferent. No matter how long we have been following Jesus, we should never cease to be amazed at who he is and what he can do. We should never lose that wonder of the cross and what it means for us. We should never take prayer or the Bible lightly and take it for granted. It's really easy, isn't it, to become distracted with lesser things and priorities than Jesus in our life. We need to keep Jesus the main thing, not only in our lives, but also in our church. So if today we might think we have become too familiar or blasé about Jesus and faith, can I encourage us to go to God and take it to him in prayer and ask God to renew our hearts and fill us with his Spirit? But also for us to think about in our lives and in this church, how can we create a growing sense of expectation of what God can do? There's a great prayer in Mark chapter 9, and I personally use it often. It's a man who called out to Jesus, "Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief." I wonder today where we need to pray that prayer, but also to keep it in our minds as we journey with Jesus.